Good morning, and welcome to our Sunday service. Maybe you've seen that. It's been going around on the internet for a little while, but maybe you haven't thought of it that way. The church, all the different kinds of things that we're into all over the world. It's just great to see it that way. You want to get your outline out so you can follow along with this morning's message. It should be there in your program. And I hope you'll consider sticking around after our service because we have our sub-lunch and cake auction just after the service is over today. About a year ago, a dear friend of ours died. He attended Stony Creek Church. I officiated at his funeral. Many of you knew him and were there at the funeral. His name was Horst Lindner, a crusty 92-year-old German. Horst was a bit peculiar, to put it mildly. Among his many odd traits, the most bizarre was that despite being a devout, hard-boiled, staunch as they come, militant atheist, he loved attending Stony Creek Church. Every Sunday since he started back in the year 2000, I'm quite sure that Horst had the best attendance record of anyone during those years, any of us. He was here every Sunday with rare exception. His attendance was certainly better than mine. I at least take a vacation every once in a while. But Horst, the dear man, would scold me for taking vacations when I'd get back. You need to be here! The dear man was legendary for his peculiar behavior. It would qualify for Ripley's Believe It or Not, I'm sure. I'd be up here preaching, and he'd be sitting maybe third or fourth row back there. And he would lean over to somebody, maybe a first-time visitor. And he would say to the person, Janet knows. He would say to the person loudly enough so I could hear it while I'm up here speaking. He would say, "What he's saying up there, it's BS. Only Horst did not just use the initials. Now, it wasn't that Horst didn't like me or even my sermons. He would come up to me after the service on pretty regular occasion and say, "Randy, that was a great talk. Very powerful. There's just one problem. I don't believe there's a God." Minor problem. One time, Horst wore a Playboy shirt to church with pictures of bunnies all over it. And I don't mean Easter bunnies. After he was asked politely but directly to go home and change his shirt, he stormed out vowing to never return again. Similar episodes took place on several other occasions when I had to confront him directly about making inappropriate comments to people or acting obnoxiously. He would tell a person who might be a bit overweight. I don't like fat people. Or once a newcomer came here to church and was starting to attend, you know, had come several weeks in a row, and this fellow always wore a baseball cap. And Horst came up to him and said, take that off in church. That was the last time the guy ever came to Stony Creek Church. And so I would have to pull Horst into my office and say, Horst, I love you, man. And I want you here, but if you're going to attend, you must behave yourself. He'd get mad and he would leave. He would call and scream at me on my voicemail, leaving long messages until the thing just ran out of tape or whatever, you know. And I'd think, oh, he's gone for good. But then a week or two later, he'd be back here, and he would come down and apologize to me and tell me he was going to behave himself. Why would a guy like Horst, of all people, like coming to Stony Creek Church, a hardcore atheist? He loved it because he knew he was loved here. A crusty, cantankerous guy like Horst wouldn't likely find many places where he would be accepted. But a church filled with people who love Jesus did accept him. Despite our many differences, which we debated long and hard with Horst, Horst loved the people here, and they loved him. Here were people who would invite him over to their homes, visit him, have breakfast with him, remember his birthday with gifts and phone calls, people who would talk to him regularly. Horst would often say to me, Randy, I love you. I love you. He would tell me this while he was hanging on to my hand. I don't believe in a God, but I love you. And I would say, Horst, I love you too, man. That's why I keep telling you that you need Jesus. You need Jesus, Horst, or you're going to end up in hell. Today, many people, even people who identify themselves as Christians, say they don't need church. Church is irrelevant. You can get what you need in other ways. Are they right? Is church dispensable? Is it just optional? Or is it indispensable? Is it something you need? Today we begin a new series called Why Church? You know, for all of Horst's many faults, I think he was onto something that too many people miss. The title of today's message is Family. Why Church? Family. It's all wrapped up in our main question and answer that you can fill in there on your outline. Why church? Well, the answer is because you need the spiritual family that Jesus founded. This morning, we're going to look at three reasons why you need a local church family. The first is point number one on your outline, because you need to prioritize Jesus' relatives. Most people know that Jesus' mother was Mary, and his stepfather was Joseph. Just about everybody knows that. What many people don't know is that Jesus had brothers and sisters. He did. When the people of Jesus' hometown of Nazareth heard all about the miracles and his astounding teaching, This is what they said in Matthew chapter 13, beginning at verse 55. Please help me out when we come to the yellow print. When the people of Jesus' hometown of Nazareth heard about his miracles, they said, "Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mother's name Mary? And aren't his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas? Aren't all his sisters with us?" This is shocking to many people. Jesus had four brothers that are listed here, and at least two sisters. It speaks of them in the plural, and since it says, "Aren't all his sisters here?" it's probably more than two, maybe several sisters. Can you imagine growing up with a perfect brother? Imagine that. How tough that could be. Now, if you want to find out, just talk to Ron or Scott. They'll tell you. Actually, it's the exact opposite, let me assure you. We know that during Jesus' ministry, his brothers did not believe in him. But after he arose from the dead, they became devout Christ followers and traveling preachers, spreading the word. I'm sure Jesus loved his family. But what's so astounding is that Jesus actually placed a higher priority on his other relatives, his other family, his spiritual family. Look at Matthew chapter 12, beginning at verse 46. It says, "While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside the house, wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, 'Your mother and your brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you.' He replied to him, 'Who is my mother and who are my brothers?' Pointing to his disciples, he said, 'Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother.'" Now this is amazing. Notice Jesus speaks here of a family other than his natural blood relatives. The father of this family, of course, is none other than God the Father. He speaks of him as my Father in heaven. But the scandalous part, at least to many of us and our thinking, is that Jesus speaks of the disciples sitting around him as his brothers and sisters and mother. That's really profound, isn't it? How does one qualify? How does one make it into this family of Jesus? How does one become a member of this family? Well, it's not by being born naturally into it. It's by being born again into his family. Look what it says in Galatians chapter 3, verse 26. It says, "For you are all children of God through faith in Jesus Christ." So when you commit yourself to him as your personal Lord and Savior, you become a child of God. Back in those days, in Jesus' day, family ties were strong and tighter, much more so than often today. Back then, you got your whole identity from your family, who your father was. That was extremely important. What clan you descended from shaped every aspect of your life and your future. And so when Jesus' natural family shows up outside and he's surrounded by a crowd, naturally, he's going to drop everything he's doing to attend to them, right? But not so. To the shock and awe of everyone, even back in those days. He says, "This is my family right here." Do you know that some cult groups and even some biblical scholars have pointed to texts like this one to argue that Jesus was actually anti-family? That only his spiritual family mattered, and basically his message was, don't bother with your natural family. Leave them. Who cares about them? It's the band of spiritual family that matters. But this is not true. Jesus taught us in other places to honor father and mother, to care for our parents. He chided people who did not care after their parents. Did you hear that, guys? I just want to make sure that my daughters and son heard that. He also taught that we needed to be faithful husbands and wives and dads and moms. But don't miss the lesson here. Sometimes we just dismiss these texts. The lesson here is that Jesus did indeed come to form a new family, a spiritual family, with God as our Father and Jesus, amazingly, as our elder brother, a tight family. If push comes to shove, if a choice is forced, it's either Jesus and his people or us. If that's what you're told, then Jesus' family has to take priority over the natural family. This is radical, really. Revolutionary. Think of the implications of this. It means that we in the church are relatives. And not just that, but close relatives. Even that brother in the next row with bad breath. Or that woman over there, over somewhere, I won't point, who talks too much, gives too much information. Or that guy who doesn't take a shower enough, right? The implications here are astounding. You may get to choose your friends, but not your relatives, as they say. Family is a priority. Look what Paul says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 10. He says, whenever we have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone, especially to those in the family of faith. In the context here, he's talking about the local church. He says, yeah, be good to everybody. Love your neighbor as yourself, but especially your church family. Prioritize your relatives. Let's look at a second reason why you need a local church family. Number two on your outline is because you need to nurture family ties. Many of you belong to a tight, very loving family. When you get together for a family gathering, you hug each other. Tight family. That's for Chris. He loves The Simpsons. Maybe you plant a kiss on the cheek. When you come home at the end of the day, maybe you hug. When you go out the door, maybe you say, love ya. If a family member is in an accident or suddenly becomes ill, you drop what you're doing to rush to the hospital and help in any way you can. You may have your family squabbles, but there's no doubt that you care about each other and that you're there for each other. Being together is important, especially on special occasions. You're proud of your family, and rightly so. When my daughter, Jess, got accepted into Grand Valley recently, I posted it on Facebook. I'm proud of her. And when Johnny got his great ACT score, Debbie posted it on Facebook, and we were so proud of him. Family ties are strong, and rightly so. This is a good thing. The early Christians in New Testament times took Jesus' teaching about new spiritual family. They took this very seriously. They called each other brother and sister, so much that some of their enemies, do you know this? They actually accused, back in the first and second centuries, they actually accused Christians of incest. You know why? Because husband and wife would start referring to each other as brother and sister. I'd say those two are married, and yet they're brother and sister. Now, of course, this was a pernicious lie. This was a false accusation. But in order for something like that to get started, you can imagine that the Christians had to be very tight with one another, very close. Like close families today, Christians would warmly greet each other. Look at what it says in 1 Corinthians 16:20. All the brothers and sisters, notice the family emphasis there, here send you greetings. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Now, guys, don't come and kiss me. I don't want that. But the idea here, this was a cultural thing, like it is in many places still in the world where kissing was done for a greeting. But it indicates a close family relationship. Today, it might be a holy handshake. Like some ladies this morning said to me, hey, have you had a hug yet? And they hugged me. I said, I'm going to be talking about that today. Well, I was so glad to see that that's the kind of thing we do around here, even before I talk about it in a sermon. In New Testament times, when a brother or sister was in need of food and clothing, the other shared the resources with that person. Look at Acts chapter 4. Beginning at verse 32, it says, all the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. Christians became so well known for this kind of thing that even their enemies marveled at it. About 150 years after the birth of Christ, a Greek writer by the name of Lucian, certainly no friend to the Christians, he recorded his observations about Christians with these words. He says, it's incredible to see the fervor with which the people of that religion help each other in their needs. They spare nothing. Their first legislator, and he's talking, of course, about Jesus, their first legislator has put it into their heads that they are brothers. He was right. Jesus said, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another, John 13 says. 35. As many of you know, Stony Creek Church recently conducted a church-wide survey. Many of you participated in that, members and attendees, to find out what we value most here about Stony Creek Church. The answers were revealing. We asked the question, what are the top three reasons you continue to attend Stony Creek Church? The most popular answer by most people, 60%, was relationships, personal connections, family atmosphere. That's good. We view Stony Creek Church as a family. People sense that this is not just a theater or a restaurant or a grocery store where you walk in and you get what you want and then you leave and maybe you didn't have any interaction or very little with the people around you. Many churches are like that. I think that's unfortunate. It's not the way church is designed to work. It's supposed to be a family. This is a major reason why people love our church. I'm so blessed often to hear people saying, I don't know what I would do without my church family. And often they say that at a time of great need. Equally neat is what our survey also reveals, the fact that though we're a close family, we're not a closed family. When we asked, what are the top three advantages Stony Creek Church has from your point of view to invite friends? The answer that crushed all the others, again, I thought there were slides on this. No? Ah, they didn't come out. Well, again, the answer is, what's the big advantage? Why you would want to invite friends? That the top one, again, was relationships, friendliness, family atmosphere. Do you know that that even beat out the 11 o'clock service sermon style and quality? Now, I know I should be offended. But actually, I'm so glad about that. You got, humanly speaking, you guys are the draw. Not me. You. Our family feel here is our best asset for attracting others. I'm proud of you guys. When I see you going the extra mile to share a meal with the sick or grieving or to open your homes to others, and when I see people loaning their vehicles and their homes and their boats and their cottages, and in some cases even giving a vehicle away to a needy person here at the church, I say, this is what Jesus talked about. When I see thousands of dollars being donated to the Love Fund to help needy people inside our church and outside of our church, I say, way to go, Stony Creek Church. When I see a sponsor kids who can't afford to go to summer camp or go on the mission trip, or when I see you helping out an elderly or terminally ill person, or just repairing a car at your own expense, somebody here at the church, or fixing a busted set of front steps, or helping to clean up a flooded basement, or just hanging out together and having fun. I say, this is a family. But family ties need to be nurtured. Though this is a strength at Stony Creek Church, we can always still improve. There's still room for improvement. You know that some people still fall through the cracks here at Stony. It happens. Every so often I'll hear of a person who visits our church and word gets back to me that person said to somebody, you know, no one even said hello to me. I know that's kind of hard to believe, but I guess it happens sometimes. We need to always be on the lookout to greet people warmly and introduce ourselves and to ask if we can be of help or be of service in any way. Every so often a person has a need that gets neglected. Maybe the word didn't get out enough. I don't know. But we really have to look out for each other. Take the initiative. Don't wait for me. Don't wait for someone else. Just jump right in and show kindness. Here's a few ways we can nurture our family ties here at Stony Creek. One, take the initiative to show kindness. Maybe sharing a text or a phone call or an email. Certainly jumping in just to lend a hand. Secondly, post and pray for prayer requests on our Stony Creek Church Facebook page. It's a great way to get the word out and get people praying. Many of you already do these things. Third, donate to the Stony Creek Church Love Fund. This is not the general offering. This is something that you specifically designate above and beyond your regular giving for those who are in need here at the church and outside the church. Four, join a small group. It's a great place to foster the family relationships. And then five, stick around for fellowship after the services. Today you get an excellent example to do that and eat together. Get to know others and be a family to your brothers and sisters. Let's look at a third reason why you need a local church family. Number three on your outline is because you need to share family duties. Few family duties can be done over the phone or via a text message. Most of the time, you need to be there in person to mow the lawn or to clean the kitchen or to take out the trash or to do the laundry. And even if you have a maid do all that stuff or they come up with an app to do all that stuff, there'll never be an app to replace a hug or a kiss or a pat on the back or that can wipe away a tear or tell a bedtime story or trim a Christmas tree together. If they come up with an app for that, I hope I don't live to see it. Nothing will ever replace a family being together. And the same is true when it comes to the church family. You need to be here in person for it to work properly. There are family duties that the New Testament commands that you have to be here to make happen. For example, Galatians 6:2 says, "Carry of each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ." You might be able to pray for somebody long distance, certainly, but you can't visit him or her in the hospital or bring a family meal or put an arm around a shoulder at a funeral home or watch someone else's kids. You can't do that over the internet. Bearing one another's burdens calls for commitment and live interaction with one another. Another example, you can't do this unless you're connected to a local church. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17, "Obey your spiritual leaders and do what they say. Their work is to watch over your souls, and they are accountable to God." The leaders that are mentioned here are church leaders. Now, how can you obey this command that is given by God to the church, to us, if you're not committed to a local church with the leadership structure given in the New Testament? Jesus founded Christianity as a team sport. You need the family to play the game, just like you need a field and a ball and a team to play football or soccer. Why did Jesus make Christianity into a team sport? Why not just an individual thing? Just me and Jesus. The answer comes in a passage that is often misunderstood. Look at this, folks. At the last judgment, we are told that Jesus will gather all the nations in front of him, and he will separate them into two groups, one on his right hand and one on his left. Look what it says in Matthew 25, beginning at verse 34. "Then the king will say to those on his right, You who are blessed, come by my Father. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. Help me out. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. Then those righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink, or a stranger and give you hospitality, or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will say, I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. Now, who are these brothers and sisters that he speaks of? Is it just any random needy person? That's the way this passage is almost always taken. But that's not what it's talking about here. Hint: who did Jesus identify earlier in the Gospel of Matthew as his brothers and sisters? His disciples. His family. Jesus is saying the way you treat his family is the way you're really treating him. Notice that these are things you need to do in person: visiting a prisoner, caring for the sick, inviting the needy person into your home. This is live action. And guess what? It works the other way around too, doesn't it? You need to be here so the church can do these things for you. But then Jesus will say to those on his left, depart from me, because you didn't do these things for me. You remember? And they'll answer, Lord, when did we neglect you? We never saw you showing up to do these things. We certainly would have done it, because you and I are close. We've got our own private little personal relationship with each other. And he'll say, when you neglected my family, you neglected me. How you treat Jesus' family is how you treat Jesus. You know, it's very hip these days, very cool to be highly critical of the church. I love Jesus, it's just Christians I can't stand. You heard that? Look at this. I've got nothing against God, it's his fan club I can't stand. Now, we deserve some of this. Many so-called Christians have behaved badly. Much of what calls itself church is sadly not the real thing. Yes, we can do better. But guess what? At the end of the day, Jesus will say to the critics, that's no excuse. That's what he's going to say. This is my family. And if you got a problem with my brothers and sisters, if you blow them off and say, I don't need them, I got my own personal relationship with Jesus, if you say that to them, you've done it to me. Got a problem with the church? You got a problem with me, says Jesus. And so why church? Because you need the spiritual family Jesus founded. I thank God that Horst Lindner attended Stony Creek Church. God put him here to train our love muscles. It was a lot of exercise. It was a workout to test our patience. You know, I don't know if I ever succeeded in teaching Horst anything. I tried. Till his dying day, we were still pleading with him when he was on his deathbed to trust in Jesus as his personal Lord and Savior. He could hear us, but he couldn't respond. And I hope that Horst finally did receive Jesus. But either way, I thank God for all that Horst taught me, taught us how precious a family Stony Creek Church is. He could see it. Even if he couldn't bring himself to join it by joining himself to Jesus. Don't you make the same mistake.